What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we bring on JP Nurbin. You know, by family links is an Ohioan, so I'm happy to bring JP on. Good to have you. Good morning over there in Ireland. It's probably afternoon by now.
Yeah, no, we're just hitting lunchtime, so got a little food in me. I'm ready to go, man.
Perfect. Good to have you on. A lot of topics that are very important, but I don't think get the deep dives and the attention. So really excited to talk about sports parents, developing leaders, part of positive behavior change, and something that I'm very big on, which is transformational leadership. You know, like ultimately we're trying to create great taxpaying citizens, not leeches and problems. So, you know, was this a calling to write on these topics? Is this something that you saw that there was a need for? Like, how did you find this? Where was your struggle? I talk on the podcast all the time. I'm like, I had to create all the solutions for my newsletter, and I was just doing it on my own because I couldn't find it out there, and I needed to fill that need in my own life. And I was like, oh, there's no way I'm not the only one here. There's got to be multiple people with these issues.
Yeah, I for me, my journey into this space has been as a coach and through my own struggles initially, and just kind of writing about the challenges of coaching and some of the practical things that I've found along the way that have helped me be better as a leader, impact athletes on a personal level more, helping to bring a team together, and also work, you know, obviously we're even working with parents of athletes, which is such a hot topic. So, you know, I initially just started writing blogs, and then eventually I just felt called enough to write books on a few areas where I felt there was a need. There wasn't the coaching literature out there to really provide coaches with the resources and tools they needed.
Beautiful. So how did you come to the part of transformational? Like, because I feel a lot of people are transactional, because it takes a lot of intention and a lot of time to get to that transformational. Maybe we should start even back. Like, what is transformational compared to transactional?
Yeah, there's a great word you just said there, which is intention. I would say that oftentimes the difference between transformational and transactional is just intentionality. So intentionality that aligns with our purpose. So do our behaviors, do our strategies, do our ways of coaching, do those align with our intent? And I think every coach that gets into coaching wants to make an impact. We want to help young people. We want to bring a team together to do something special. I don't know many coaches that don't have that, some sort of purpose that sounds really positive like that. People don't get into coaching because, well, they wouldn't tell you they get in coaching because they have some sort of ego issue, or they are trying to make up for something they never accomplished when they were an athlete, or to prove themselves. You know, like, nobody says that's why they coach. It was never for me. Like, those weren't my reasons for coaching. My reasons were I wanted to give back to the sport that gave so much to me. And so my problem was, and why I was so oftentimes transactional with coaching, is if you looked at, well, what's really important to me? I mean, I might've told you making a difference, creating positive memories, and developing young people is really important to me. And those things were, but just what's most important at the end of the day and how I acted and how I responded within my coaching and how I tried to motivate was often very transactional. It was about myself. It was about, you know, this, what was, you know, about winning and the results, which those things are important and they matter. They're just not the thing that matters the most. And so when it comes back to what transformational coaching is, it's focusing on the things that matter the most in coaching or even leadership, which is people, the memories, the experience, the difference you make. And it's having intentionality where your behaviors, your processes, your methods for as a leader align with what's most important.
Can you give some examples of what some of those things look like when you're talking about transformational, being intentional? You know, how are you actually going about helping make these memories and this positive life change?
So much it has to do with A, how we spend our time. So before I said I valued athletes, but then if I looked at the majority of my conversations with my athletes, it was around them as an athlete, not around them as a person. And so are we creating time to consistently be checking in with them, learning about what's important to them, not just within their sport, but within life in general? And so we have some really intentional ways of having one-on-ones with athletes where we're really curious and we're learning more about the person. That would be just, so how we spend our time is one for sure. And I could go and go because everything in my book, The Culture System, is really about what that looks like. But I would also say another big area that we could explore too is just our behaviors as a coach. So often we are reactive. We are operating from our default mode as a leader, which our default mode, we coach the way that we were coached. We coach the way that we were parented. We coach just from our, oftentimes our basic reactions, our personality, we allow that to take over. And transformational coaching, we'd have to stop maybe just doing what feels natural or easy or comfortable. And we start to have more intentional, more deliberate ways of responding. So for me as a coach, that meant when my players weren't working hard initially as a transactional coach, I often would just resort to yelling, screaming, putting them on the line and just making them run. Just the things that just everyone seems to do as a coach and I experienced myself. That never felt good because it wasn't actually authentic to my purpose, right? So when I get authentic to my purpose, I stop doing those things and I start going and focusing, okay, what lines up with my purpose of making an impact and what's beneficial ways of responding? So intentional responses in those moments are finding new ways of holding athletes accountable, using things that still respect their autonomy and choice, like a logical consequence of sitting a player out from a drill until they're ready to come back in and work at the level that we want them to. So not yelling at an athlete, but get starting with curiosity and asking questions like, hey, what's going on for you? What are you struggling with? So those would be a couple examples.
Mentioned something that right at the end that catches my attention, which is starting with curiosity. I know personally my most impactful conversations is starting with what's going on. Are you okay? And then letting the player go from there, whether it be a personal, like I'm thinking right now of two examples. One was a player got in a fight as he was competing with another player. It's like, what's going on? And, you know, instead of you can't be doing that, giving a lecture of sorts, you know, he opened up about some things that were going on in his personal life and it was bleeding into, you know, his anger a little bit into the rink. So it was actually not so much about that exact situation, but something bigger in his life. Another one was just a kid who was struggling and kind of wrecking the activity. And it's like, you okay? Like, what, you having problems somewhere? Like, how can we help? He's like, no, I'm good, coach. You know, I'll be locked in on the next one. And it was a great practice from then on. And just starting with that questioning, I feel like every coach goes through that phase of they start by kind of yelling and then they start telling and they finally figure out, okay, maybe I should start with curiosity and asking. And it's not the sarcastic asking, like, why'd you do that? Yeah, it's more accusation more than anything. Yeah. So I find the biggest issue I see is sarcasm. A lot of coaches love sarcasm, which is really difficult when you think about it from the player's perspective, like what's real, what's not, how do I actually take it? And not everyone understands sarcasm. It takes usually more developed minds. And even then it's usually not positive. And just starting with that curiosity and asking questions, I feel like that's super, super important.
Yeah. And I love what you shared. There are some great questions. We're only able to have curiosity though, and really know those questions when we have a curious mindset. And so what that requires is sometimes for us as leaders, let's say I do coach a player and I give them some feedback and the player blows up on me. Well, I oftentimes would get really defensive and I would become triggered. Well, I can't come in with curiosity in that moment. So first off, I have to actually develop the psychological skills to downregulate myself as a leader, or we're in a high pressure situation that our team goes on a run, they score a few goals on us, right? How do I respond in the right way? Well, I can't if I'm dysregulated. So I have to downregulate myself. I think the other thing in that, you know, to do that effectively for ourselves, but also is to help our athletes do that. And ways that we can do that for ourselves and others is just to notice. I like what's going on, but I also like, hey, what's coming up for you? Or what are you noticing in yourself? I want to go beyond just general facts and stories of what's going on in their life. I also want them just to be, and myself, when I become emotionally charged or triggered, I want to check in with what I'm feeling physically in my body. Right. I want to help athletes to be able to be in tune, be more mindful. We talk about mindfulness, and a lot of us think that means our team sitting around and meditating for 10 minutes. That actually just means sometimes they're just being checked with, like, oh, I'm feeling really angry here and I'm really tense. You know, it's checking in and being aware of what they're thinking. You know, what are the stories that the athlete's telling them and themselves in that moment? What feelings are coming up for them in that moment? And then you're also, what are some other external factors that may have impacted how they're showing up for us? And I think, you know, those are good questions, but I always like, hey, what are you noticing in yourself? Or hey, what's the story you're telling yourself right now? And those types of questions can really help to bring awareness to ourselves and to our athletes.
You just hit something that I find to be massive. I've seen it in many people that are close to me or people that I'm mentoring. It is like, what is the story we are telling ourselves? What is that self-talk, that inner voice? You know, there's plenty of professional athletes that you can just tell their self-talk is just super negative and they're unbelievably hard on themselves, which, you know, has its component of helping them perform at a high level and, you know, being that self-critical and being able to correct and all of that. But to a point where, you know, they start to like self-implode a little bit, or they go to that dark space that's super difficult. I'm curious about, when you're talking about self-talk, ways to help players better develop more useful, whether it be emotional regulators or just talking themselves through, or just like Kobe Bryant had a great one about like just observing the emotions that are coming. Like, I just observe my emotions and then I choose what's the one I want to go with or what's real, or, you know, so everyone comes to those moments where the emotion takes over and it's like, okay, how can you get better at understanding it, feeling it, and then responding in a way that leads to what you want? You know, you're not adding gas to the fire. Maybe you're adding some water instead.
Yeah. I think in this situation, we have a lot of coaches that, you know, we might have different activities that a mental performance coach might have done with teams in the past, which is just, okay, what's positive self-talk? What's negative self-talk? Let's think about, you know, what are some thoughts that we commonly have and how can we replace those with some more positive ones? And we might write those down. We might have them like put those affirmations on our shoes, on our skates, on a wristband, or write it on a note card in our locker, right? That's great, right? Those things are good. But I think one of the most effective things that we can do to help athletes to retrain their self-talk is to help them become aware of it in the moment. And so having conversations off the ice in a classroom where you talk around the stories, the thoughts that, you know, that are coming up for us and how those don't serve us, that's great. But you really want to be able to equip them with a few triggers or a few tools where in the moment, you know, guy takes, he has a shift, he comes off the ice, you know, where you can help him just to, hey, what are you noticing out there? What are you noticing yourself? Or like, guy's really emotional. Like what emotions are coming up for you? Like, what are those thoughts right now? Okay. How's that working for you? What would be a more beneficial mindset or thinking to have when you go out there right now? So I think the more we can get people to be in tune with their thinking and also attuned to just what those thoughts are triggering, right? I think that connecting different thinking to emotions and physical reactions within our body, being aware of that, then we're able to start to change those thoughts. I think the other thing too, though, is like a lot of research out there shows that it's sometimes really hard to change our thinking. We may not be feeling very motivated, and sometimes acting differently is the thing that changes our thinking. And so sometimes it's like, hey, I know you don't feel like it. I know the story is this, but let's go to what's some action you can take to be the type of teammate you want to be right now. What's some action you can take to be the type of person you want to be right now. So sometimes it's just trying to find the next best action, and that itself can help us to shift our thinking.
The next best action. I find that to be like just mental strength in general. Like, how can you focus and do the next most important thing? And it's tough, because a lot of people want to ruminate on good or bad rather than just it is what it is, and then let the emotions take them where they're going to go. And almost they're almost looking for affirmation of their emotion, which everyone needs in some capacity. But many times, especially with young people who are figuring out how to regulate or how to go about all of these things, they don't have the capability, skills, or just the experiences to be able to handle them effectively. I feel like that's a huge struggle. Curious if you've got some more insights to share on that.
Yeah, I really appreciate your questions, because I think you are really drilling for depth here and not allowing us to gloss over these things. And I think that's really, really great. Just want to make that note of that. I think one of the best things that we can do for our athletes and for ourselves is think around those actions that align with the identity that we want. You know, when you're down 3-0 or, you know, multiple goals, you're getting crushed in the third period and you're really, really struggling. The next best action, oftentimes it really, well, like what does it mean to keep, like, it just, it doesn't naturally always come that easy, you know, when you just focus on the results. But when you focus on your, not on the being, the identity, who do I want to be? And what are the values? What are things that are really important to me? It's just even as a coach, you know, then, okay, what, if I was that type of coach, or if I was that type of athlete, you know, then what would I do? And James Clear talks about this in Atomic Habits. He does a really great job of that, you know, of really allowing our identity to guide some of those behaviors that we need to take. So I think it's really helping our athletes and working with ourselves to understand who we are today, who we want to be next. And when we think about who we want to be next, you know, I think that really starts to help provide a framework for next best actions.
All right. We can keep going down this rabbit hole, but I think it's time to just change it ever so slightly. Developing leaders. Like, I've never heard of a team that's like, you know what? I just have too many leaders. How do we go about developing leadership? You know, like, this is a challenge that I personally faced with my high school team currently. Is we're probably the youngest team in the state. Like, we've got three seniors, one's an exchange student. We have two juniors, 12 to 14, depending on the day, sophomores, and another four freshmen. And then behind that, we've got large classes of like 10, 12, 18, 10 again. So we're not exactly going to be getting old fast. So, you know, how do, you know, even selfishly, how do I go about developing leaders better, especially at these youngest ages where maybe the life experience isn't quite there to pull from quite yet?
Yeah, well, we think we got to find our answer here. We need to go to the real research. And what the research shows is that telling people how to lead doesn't help them lead, become a leader, right? Giving them a book doesn't make them a leader, like a book on leadership and having them read it. It doesn't mean that those things are bad. Those things are good, and those things can help to educate on leadership. But leadership is a skill. Leadership is a muscle. And so to develop it, you have to actually exercise it. You have to use it. And so oftentimes that means you got to give them reps. And so leadership development should be experiential. And that's what a lot of the research would come out of, like people like from the Harvard Business Review and some of those you know, places around where the research is around leadership, is it's through experiential things where we as coaches are acting more as a bit of a guides on their journeys rather than these wise sage mentor leader, right, type of things. Like, it's just, we're just kind of walking the journey with them. And so what to effectively develop leadership in a team, you need to focus on the system. So do you have captains? Do you have a leadership council, right? I advocate for a bit more of a leadership council model, right? A few more people than just your two traditional captains, but you know, you could still do it through captains. The idea though is, are you meeting with these people each week? Potentially, are you meeting with them even daily in some short little 2 to 5 minute huddles to check in with them, to talk about the challenges that the team's facing, to challenge them areas where they can step up and lead? So when it comes to leading, that means making decisions. That means having hard conversations. That means stopping things and bringing the team together on the ice to help them to readjust their effort or their focus. Like, this is what we should be putting on the players. So often, like when I was a coach initially, I would just give the leaders like, hey, you guys can pick out the shoes for the team this year. I was a basketball coach. And I was like, you could pick out what slogan we put on the back of our t-shirt or the rooming assignments for the team on this trip. And it's like, okay, if that's all I'm allowing them to decide, then that's all they'll ever take ownership for. But to put your team, especially have your leaders lead a conversation where it's like, okay, when it comes to our practices, when it comes to our games, when it comes to how we do things off the ice here, what do we want to strive for? What do we expect out of each other? And what do we not tolerate? You guys come up with the standards around this team, you know, and using them to guide the standards when players aren't meeting the standards, rather than going sometimes directly to that player, you might go to one of the people in your leadership group and say, hey, Johnny over here seems to be struggling to be on time, or Ben over here seems to be really struggling with his effort and practice. What are you going to do to help him? You know, and so it's challenging them. It's there's so many ways that we can really give them responsibility to lead. But we kind of sit back and just say, oh, geez, we've got nobody that wants to hold each other accountable here. And we just put our hands up. But it's really about leaning in and offering them the support, giving them the teaching, the education, some of the coaching along in those moments. And so it's a daily process with our leadership group.
Yeah, I find a common thing with players, especially at the youngest ages, is like a lot of adults talk about praising in public, criticizing in private. And a lot of players will do like the exact opposite, where they'll tell you like, oh, I'm really proud of so-and-so. And then publicly in front of their team, it's like, blah, 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 what are you doing? You know, obviously it comes from a great place, but finding those elements and being able to guide along the side a little bit rather than the sage on the stage, I think is a critical element. And just giving them tactical ideas, or like, I have one player who's fantastic at never cutting corners, always doing it the right way, but he doesn't really talk or communicate. So like, that's my challenge to him right now, is like, find ways to use your voice to also lead. Like, your actions are great, but find your space. And it doesn't have to be constant, you know, hoorah, rah type stuff. Just find one extra thing a day that you can say or do. You know, go put your arm around a teammate and help them get better self-talk, whatever it may be. Just one extra thing where we're communicating via voice rather than just doing it the right way and never cutting corners and all that. Because I find that to be something that I have yet to meet a player coming from a bad spot, but finding good ways to have an outlet. Or like, you've got the player who's on the bench constantly snipping on, why isn't the winger where they need to be? Or is constantly doing sarcastic, oh, I never get to play with good players. Like, all of these terrible things that we know are not effective. I call them the gas, like putting your gas on the fire rather than putting water on the fire. We don't want fires in our world. We want a fire in the belly, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like how you've given some really good examples there. And I think at the end of the day, my challenge to every coach would be, I want to look at your practice plan and sit down with you after every practice and say, okay, where in the practice did you really develop and work on the leadership of your athletes? Where was a moment you maybe coached it? You gave them space to actually be more of a voice. And we should all be able to point to that in every practice if we value it, if we think it's something worth developing. And so sometimes I tell coaches, it's like you kind of almost, you take half a drill off. Like you say, hey, I'm only going to stop this drill or reset this drill if this happens. All other communication is going to come from you all, from the players. So it's, I think just there could be that. It could be the players called a timeout in practice, right? You went to a leader on the team and said, hey, our effort's not where it needs to be. I need you to call timeout. I need you to get them together. I need you to get them to raise their effort, right? So we should always have evidence every day of what we're doing to develop leaders. I've even have coaches that will huddle with their captains every practice and they'll talk about, okay, hey, here's a challenge. Okay, how can you help us as with your leadership today overcome this challenge? You know, we just came off a really tough loss. We just came off, you know, a bunch of practices. We're a little bit worn down today. But you're really bringing them into the challenge of leadership every day. And I think that's huge.
Yeah, something you mentioned was about just like giving space to players. Like I'm a huge fan of like setting up an activity, telling the players what to do. It's like the instructions of, hey, we're going to do this, that, and the other, and then just letting them have the sandbox, like not jumping in too early. If there's confusion, like talk to your teammates to figure it out. Like, don't come to me. Like you have to rely on each other. You have to rely on yourself, and giving that sandbox time over. And a big thing is just like being able to have the time or having the space to chat with players is allowing the activity to be what I call coachless. Like we're not actually running the activity and designing coachless activities or whistleless activities where I barely need a whistle during practice. I've yet to figure out a way to not have a whistle at all. Someday, hopefully we'll get there. But right now, like I think there are two practice activities I have in my repertoire where I'm like actually needing to spot a puck. The rest of them can be run by the players and they all know what to do, and just giving them the sandbox. I feel like that those two elements for me are massive. Is like, how do you find the time and the space? How do you give them the sandbox? Cause nowadays, not sure what it's like in Ireland, but definitely in the United States, parents do a ton for their kids, which is great and admirable. And they want the better life. They want the better this, that, and the other, but it takes away what you've kind of talked about. It's like the autonomy and the experience and the reps and the activity, like just the space to develop and the time to develop all the experiences to develop leadership, self-talk, emotional regulators, et cetera, which can be easily taken away if parents jump in too much and they don't allow for that struggle a little bit, that messiness, that chaos, rather than everything structured and time and organized. And it's super valuable and impactful. And I used to coach college players, and I saw that like the ones that came out of experiences where the parents, you know, blazed the path versus the ones that maybe need to hack a little bit and blaze the path themselves. And I can tell you which one was way more, you know, effective and better, and the ones that had better results later into life.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm doing a good job of this or if it's going to be effective, but I've read a lot of the research around parenting and child development, and with my own kids, which are fairly young, like when they get into, or three of three of them, when they get into arguments, rather than fixing it for them, it's just, okay, asking them questions around, well, what do you want to do about it? You know, it's just bringing them into, well, what would you like them to do? Well, you know, what are you going to do in return? Or what's a good solution here? Trying to bring them into that to start to develop some maybe problem solving skills. So we'll see how they turn out, but I think you're really on the money there, that you know, there is a lot more structured time for kids. And so maybe that's one of the reasons that today's kids are struggling more with some of these leadership things. I think there's something else I want to mention on this, which is when it comes to what you do as a coach, I think a lot of coaches say, well, I want everyone to be a leader on my team. And I think that's bogus. I don't think that's true. I don't think every person in your organization, wherever you work, if you're a teacher or whatever, like has these strong leadership skills. I mean, those things could be developed over time, but for most people on a team, we just got to get them to lead themselves. And you know, that could be technical leadership because you're lead by example, right? But like when it comes to really being able to provide interventions, provide support and accountability for other players in the team, to be that voice that you need in the locker room and on the ice, like a few people, if you're lucky, are equipped to do that, or they have enough of an influence in the locker room that you can really work with them to develop that skill set. And I think that's a big thing, is you have to work with people that have influence. If they don't have influence, it's great that they have great work ethic, a nice attitude, but if people don't look to them, you know, it can be a real struggle to get them to lead effectively, because are people following them? I think so often there's a couple people on your team that have more influence than everybody else. And so I usually want to identify those individuals when I'm working with coaches. And it's like, okay, how can we help give them skills and equip them to lead effectively?
Yeah, the most important player on any team is the player that speaks as soon as you leave the room as a coach. If you haven't figured that one out, I'd love to introduce everyone to that concept. If you've been around for any period of time, you've already figured this out and know the value of that person, whether they're either helping or hurting the cause that you're trying to champion. Yeah, every new coach needs to learn that lesson. Sometimes it comes the hard way. Hopefully you've got a mentor that helps figure that out, because that person, whether good or bad, has the influence, and that's what matters. And it's also, I find the posse, you can sort of work with the posse that person has. So if maybe if they're not doing a positive way and they're starting to gather players towards the negative, just even on your own team, there's probably examples like so-and-so has come to practice, work hard, not cut corners, done the right things. Here's how they've developed. Here's the person that you're currently letting influence you, what they've done, which, you know, usually not very positive stuff, and how they haven't really developed. You get to choose now which one. And just, I think that's cool, because you're able to, you know, build up and edify a teammate of theirs that they respect. You know, usually it's the player that continues to come, shows up, does the work, you know, has an attitude towards curiosity and learning, and almost help grow the influence of those people that are doing it well. Because people want to be successful, and they tend to lean towards people who are having that success. Like, oh, they have it, I want to be like that. Either they're doing that or trying to, you know, take that person down a little bit, crabs in the bucket type analogy. But for the most part, people want to be around success. They like to be around that type of thing. You know, people that they admire, like, oh my gosh, like they've done a nice job for themselves. So helping almost influence that posse, I think, is also something. Like, it's not so much you should be that, you should follow that person. Just pointing out, like, you have a decision to make. Do you want to be like this person or that person? And they naturally will make the decision themselves of maybe which person is better to follow. Or at least that's what I've seen in my experience. If you've been able, I've personally been able to do that and help, you know, shape the posse a little bit, where now the people who were the negative influences are actually being led by the people who were originally following them, started to follow the other leaders. And now it's like a changing of the hierarchy a little bit on the team, which is an interesting thing to see develop.
Yeah, I think especially in teams where they're just settling in, like who your leaders are in month one isn't always who your leaders are in month three and four, right? So I think that speaks to that fact for sure. I think a few other things that are really important when you talk about influencing the posse, it's kind of like, it's one of the reasons I'm a big fan of a leadership council type model, where it's like, hey, we're going to elect, you know, three, four people and we're going to bring those people together, and we're going to have a mix. We might have a high influencer, but really talented player everyone looks to, but they struggle with some of those leadership skills. But you have some of the other ones that do the right things that you really want out of leadership. So you kind of bring people with different skill sets together to merge and really talk about, okay, how do we want to lead as a team? To that point, I think, you know, some of the questions you were asking there, I think one thing I like to have teams do is have the team come up with a job description of, okay, what does it mean to be a leader on this team? What do we need from our leadership to be successful? What are we asking out of these individuals? And so you're kind of setting a standard and also a vision or identity for a leader. And you can do that even on an individual basis with people. Like, what type of leader do you want to be? How do you want to be remembered by players on this team? What type of impact? And like you said, it's going to be something positive all the time in those answers. So then it just becomes about pointing back to that. And I think this is huge. Like, when you correct, always look to connect. When you correct, look to connect back to the standards and the identity, the standards they've set, the identity, you know, of the person they want to become, the player they want to become, the leader they want to become. So that would be a huge thing as well. Other people that are really important in the posse would be their parents. I always think that's a really, you know, building relationships with them is can be really influential. Because those are the most influential people so often in an influencer or a leader's life. Yeah, they're constantly in their ear telling them one story. And so you better have a good grasp of what that story is. And hopefully you're helping to make that story a more positive one.
Yeah, that's a perfect turn into, you know, how do we help, you know, as coaches, help the parents have a great experience and help them have a good experience through their kids many times. You know, it's not just about like their kid getting the game-winning goal and getting all the ice time or whatever it is. You know, it's also about helping them grow almost like vicariously a little bit. Like, I've seen some incredible positive changes based on seeing their kid make positive changes. And almost like they look up to their kids and they're very proud of their kids because they're making these beautiful life changes that lead them into a very positive future. So I'm curious from your perspective, when we're entering the idea and topic of parents, where you want to go?
You got to start with, you know, a relationship and a partnership when it comes to parents. I mean, it's just so foundational. They're going to be involved in the program. They're going to have influence and they're going to impact the program. Especially in like sports like ice hockey, and you're going to see a lot of influence where they are, and also a huge investment of time and resources and money. So they're going to feel like they have a seat at the table, and they kind of do in today's sporting world, whether coaches like it or not. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, obviously it provides a lot of challenges for us as coaches. But if we can start to change our mindset of that parents are just this problem, and we got to keep them at bay, we got to keep build up walls, we can start to say, okay, parents could actually help me with a lot of my challenges with certain players. Parents could actually help me to create a really positive team experience around, you know, the road trips, the games, the, you know, all those types of things, you know, off the ice type stuff. They can be helpful in that. Parents can be a positive voice in the stands, you know, if we can help shape that. So, but we don't have influence if we don't have a relationship. And so it's building that relationship starts with the right mindset, not seeing them as a problem. And then secondly, us making some time. It doesn't have to be a load of time, but we're just making a little bit of time within our season where we start to establish that partnership, where we come back and we continuously support that partnership through our communication throughout the season. And at different times, we're going to need to be ready to enforce the partnership and enforce some boundaries because, you know, all healthy relationships have boundaries. So I'm all for partnership, but I also am for the fact that this relationship has to have some boundaries in it. And so we as coaches have to be prepared to do that as well.
Yeah, I think parents can be a big thing. And I know all coaches out there have gotten this email at some point in time, or the conversation started this way, where it's, we didn't have this conversation. My kid does not know that I've reached out on blank. Sometimes they're good quality, like I didn't hear this, but good to know for the kid, and helping them on their journey and their personal growth. Other times it's not so much, where it's asking for something that might be a little unreasonable. But I guarantee every coach has had that experience where the email or conversation starts with, we didn't talk about this. You didn't hear this from me.
Yeah, so, I've had that one. There's another one I always get, which is, or other coaches get too, which is, I've never been that type of parent that, you know, it's like they disclaimer because they know they shouldn't be sending this email. And they're like, well, I've never been the parent that sends an email, but now I'm going to be that parent.
first time caller, long time listener. yeah. And I find that parents are the, I mean, obviously they're the best allies, but they can also detract. And that's the one thing that I struggle with most as a coach personally, is that parent that is a little too hard on their kids, hard on the coaches. You know, it's usually the player and parent and family that is like consistently jumping. It's always, I didn't like this coach, I didn't like that coach. And it's just constantly finding it rather than, you know, fighting for ice time and doing the actual things that make things better, which is just get better, just improve, become a better leader, become a better player, become a better person. That's where I struggle with the parents that maybe aren't looking towards that. The ones that obviously want to grow and have their kids have a great experience, their kids tend to go further and just have better fun, and they have better relationships into adulthood. I think that's the thing that parents don't see, is the future in 10 years, where do they have a good relationship with their child? And especially the ones that have like the us against the world mentality, like sooner or later, the kid goes out on their own and they start to see the cracks maybe in that foundational story that's been told to them. And that's really hurtful. And that's because I'm always looking like, okay, what's this kid going to be in 10 to 20 years? What kind of father and parent are they going to be? Like, that for me, like, that's extremely important. It's like, how are we equipping them with the skills or life skills to be able to manage that? And I would love for them to have a great experience with their parents. And I know not everyone has that, but those that do have it understand how valuable and important and like truly amazing it is for them.
It reminds me of an activity I do when I, with at parent workshops, when I facilitate, I take 10 things on a little slips of paper. And there are things like winning a championship, personal awards, playing time. And also other things that are like, you know, making positive memories, becoming a better person, becoming a better player, building friendships, right? So I put these 10 things on slips of paper, and then I put them into groups. Sometimes the athletes are actually with the parents. I say, okay, from what society tells us, what's most important, stack them in that order. And they do that. And the top three are always something around championships, personal rewards, and playing time. And then I say, okay, now restack them and do them in order of what's going to matter 10 years from now. It's always becoming a better person, memories, and friendships, you know, or something along those lines. And I say, okay, well, what do we spend most of our time focused on? It's on this first list, right? Not the second list. And so one of the most powerful things that I do is I ask them to share a story within their groups of a time where they got too caught up in that first list, the championships, the awards, the playing time, and they lost perspective. And it's just amazing to hear that the stories of vulnerability. And oftentimes I really love it when some of those difficult parents that you talked about earlier are in that meeting. In fact, I was just doing one a week ago in New Jersey, and I had a father who I knew going in there had been some real issues. Like, the coach gave me a heads up. All the parents in there apparently know, like, he's a real detractor from the culture, really hard on his son. You know, been some really embarrassing moments in the stands. And so it was really interesting how this dad would react. And sometimes in those moments, the father or mother will just kind of wall up and they won't really share. And they'll just go, this is, you know, humbug type of attitude. But this dude got super emotional, and it's been a game changer, at least for the last kind of week and a half, 2 weeks, that hasn't been an issue. Been super supportive. The athletes come back and said, man, that really made an impact on my dad. Like, it's just been so much better. We've had a conversation around it. The athletes were in that workshop. Just super cool. So I think even the crazy ones, man, I think even the crazy ones out there, they just sometimes need somebody to help them to refine that perspective around what's most important, at least give them the opportunity to reflect on that. I think that's huge, because I think at the end of the day, all parents want what's best for their kid. It's very difficult, and we all can lose ourselves a little bit.
Reflect and have a positive perspective. I think that's what really sticks out to me, is like, how do we help people have that? I mean, we do so much about asking questions, helping our players reflect. You know, how do we just grow all of the people around us? You know, like, everyone we come into contact is almost like an opportunity to make a positive change. And, you know, not every moment's a learning moment. You know, you've tried that experience, you know, players will push back. Like, not everyone needs to be a learning moment, just be a moment. But helping everyone around us have that, because, you know, we all want to be better. Like, I've never met someone who's gotten to the point where they're like, I have reached the self-identity that I want to be, the person I want to be. I've reached it and I've achieved it. Never, ever. You know, even if you have, you probably didn't set the goalpost a little bit further. Like, what's the person with good discipline? What do they want? More discipline. So it's, you know, how do you help, like you said earlier, link the identity and the person you want to be with the actions that lead towards that, or are in alignment with that identity? Because everyone wants, like you said, the best for their kid, best for themselves, best for their family, best for their community, etc. And if not, then, you know, we've got bigger issues to worry about. We'll let Jesus and other people worry about that.
Yeah, no, I some great points there. And I think the parents, when sometimes to be able to help them make that shift in perspective, it's just to find unique ways to engage them, and ways to create a positive experience where people get to know each other. The simplest way we've done that at college programs and high school programs is through a parent experience event, where we do either a team building event that you might do already with your team, that your team would be familiar with, but you include the parents in it before you do your parent meeting. But probably my favorite is the parent practice, where we bring parents on into a practice. We've seen this on the ice. I've said, coach, ice hockey coaches do it, swim coaches do it, track and field coaches, basketball, lacrosse. I mean, we bring parents on the ice, and they get to be a part of a practice. And sometimes it's the players coaching the parents, or, you know, different things like that, or maybe it's the coaches coaching the players and the parents. I mean, it looks different, but for a lot of different teams, but something that just gets people having some fun together. And then we sit down and then we have a conversation around, hey, how can we as parents create a great experience for this team? What are some things that we can do? What are some things that we should avoid doing? Have conversations like those that are really powerful. But, you know, there was one other thing I'd share here too, just to influence parents. You said, like, we can have a positive impact on a lot of people. I actually, before I started writing my most recent book, The Sports Parent Solution, I never realized it, but, you know, like, one of the things that really inspired me to start writing the book was a text I got from a parent. I hadn't talked to the parent in 6 years. The parent texted me the last interaction I had with that parent. One of the last interactions I had was really negative. Parent absolutely blasted me, lit me up. I'd known this parent for 3-4 years. And just absolutely blasts me and criticizes me, really personal attacks. Not that this parent hated me. Didn't realize that parent had a lot of other stuff going on in his life and seemed to obviously want to take it out on me in a frustrating season for everyone. So we weren't winning like we wanted to. But that parent texted me like 6-7 years later and was just like, I'm going to let you know you're the best coach my son ever had, because you didn't just help him become a better person. You helped me be a better dad. You showed me how to be both kind and firm with my son. And I honestly wasn't doing a good job with him so far up that point when in his teenage years. It essentially was the effect of that text. I never realized that, you know, like, I was actually impacting parents with my example. So I think that's we can impact parents, and it starts with our own example though.
And the influence goes much further than what you believe it does. I think that's a key thing to take away from that story as well. Like, just by coaching the kids, we're almost coaching the parents a little bit, and not everyone will take it in, but some of them will. And it, yeah, like I always laugh. My dad plays just adult pickup at the local rink that he coached at for decades, literally. And he'll still have players that'll come up to him, or parents come up to him. You're the best coach XYZ's ever had. I'm the best coach I've ever had. And I'm like, you know, I've been my entire life, and just it's cool to see from being a child. You know, like we're all childs to someone. You know, the experiences of your parents and seeing them being revered a little bit, it's super humbling and amazing that people think that they've made an unbelievably positive impact on their life, or just, you know, even on hockey would be fine, but, you know, going well beyond it. So that's really cool. We're coming up here on, you know, an hour on our conversation. I'm curious, is there anything that we didn't hit or anything else that you'd love to make comment on or highlight?
Man, I mean, there's so many things. I think what I always just say, like, what is would provide the most value for your audience, honestly, and you know, the biggest frustrations or challenges they're facing. I mean, outside of sports parents, what's a common struggle or challenge, you know, your community is facing?
I feel like the biggest challenge is always just like, how do we develop the next generation and continuously do it in a positive impact that goes well beyond what we currently have? Like, I think about like the Boston Bruins in the NHL, like just constantly, it seems like every generation is just good leader, good leader, good leader, and sets a good example and continuously has a culture that is great. Like, you never see them truly go all the way to the bottom and having to completely rebuild the organization. Like, there's been a good impact, you know, and how do we, and I think everyone's looking for this of like, how do we get that rolling where we have that great impact that lives on?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's two things that come up for me when you share that. And you mentioned like the Bruins. I think a lot of times people look at elite organizations like the Bruins, or, you know, the latest Super Bowl winning team or World Series winner that seems to be really successful and have done it in a way through culture that captures people's attention. I think the real thing is to recognize that these teams, these exceptional cultures are built by addressing the system. It's about getting upstream and really focusing on, how do we do things here? What are our processes? What are our methods? What are ways that we are constantly building culture on a daily basis? How are we establishing standards? How are we establishing relationships? How do we support those throughout the year, the standards and the relationships? What are the things that we do? And then how do we enforce them? And I don't think people focus enough on the system. You know, one thing in the system that probably gets overlooked a lot is, how do we hold people accountable? How do we enforce the standards? Like, setting standards is done a lot, setting core values done a lot, but it's like, that's great. But what happens when people don't meet those standards? What happens when people aren't living out the core values? How do we address those behaviors? And I think the thing I really encourage coaches to move away from, hockey coaches would be a big one in this, is we have got to move away from the extrinsic carrots and sticks, especially the sticks type of yelling, screaming, just very aggressive style of coaching that has been commonplace for generations. And we have to break free from that, for lack of a better term or just more common term, old school coaching, and move into a place where we're not permissive, but, you know, we're still holding standards, but we're doing it in a way that's both kind and firm, that's demanding, that's respectful of the individual at the same time. And so really where we need to explore things like logical consequences, which is our loss of privileges, right? Loss of ability to participate in a drill, loss of maybe a little bit of playing time in the game, lose the next shift, right? Those types of things, as well as some other, you know, questions, supportive type behaviors that we can step in with as coaches. But like, we really have to widen our toolkit and move away from the blaming, shaming, just complaining about our athletes that does nothing to develop the relationship and really may be effective in the short term. We may see a quick, you know, stimulus or response in the athlete, like their focus is bad. We yell at them or we make them, you know, do laps or sprints, whatever it is. And they may raise their effort or their focus may improve, but like long-term that will just, they will drown us out. They will stop listening. And really they're only working hard when we're there, you know, hanging out over them, ready to make them do the sprinting to get on them. And we want to develop, you know, character. We want to develop those skills. And so we have to really focus on more effective ways of disciplining. And I think that's an area that's so often overlooked in coaching today.
So you do something I haven't talked about really online, but I'm very big on personally when developing coaches that I work with, which is the idea around making your influence grow. Like, what you're about to do, is it going to grow your influence with the team, players, parents, or is it going to diminish it? And when you're doing bag skates or using the stick, it's usually going to drown it out. Or if you're rambling too long, right? Like, all of these things that can go towards diminishing the influence that you're going to have with athletes and have a lot of stuff going one ear and right out the other. You know, what I am about to do, is it going to help or hurt growing the influence that I want to have in the future with my players? You know, and I think that question itself will help a lot of people reflect in their own situations around, am I talking too much? Am I yelling too much? Am I using the stick a little too much? You know, are my questions, you know, are they the standard I want to have to help people grow? Because you're right, like, people raise themselves to standards. Like, people want to strive for more, but oftentimes need a little bit more to get there and eventually make it where they uphold the standards no matter what. They want to live up to it. And how do we go about finding that? I think that is a golden goose in itself. Curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I always ask coaches, what can you do to create the conditions for good things to happen? What can you do to create the conditions for good things to happen? That question's powerful because it frees us from this illusion of control that we often live with. And I think when you think about the long lectures, the begging, the pleading, the shaming, the blaming, the those types of things, we're trying to use controlling methods of coaching to control the behavior. And to develop leaders, to develop character, we have to let go of that control, that illusion of control. We have to give that up, and we have to, but it doesn't mean we just give up completely on standards. We're just creating conditions for good things to happen. So, you know, that's why we do so many of these things, you know, setting standards, reviewing those, asking questions of our athletes to reflect on those things periodically, you know, and do step in and hold them accountable. But I think that at some point, we've got to recognize our control is somewhat limited. But like you said, you know, what can we do that's going to have a positive benefit in my influence?
Coaching and farming are much more related than anyone would ever imagine. You know, you can't rush farming. You can't rush development. You know, it takes some time. You know, you got to create the conditions. You know, you got to prepare the soil. You got to, you know, nurture all of these things. So I think that's a great way to end this conversation. JP, truly wonderful. Next time you're in Ohio, please let me know. We'll go grab a Great Lakes brew together.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate the opportunity to be on here.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch a Buttes here next week for a brand new episode.